Ladies and gentlemen, this is the Sore Sound Roadshow. If you say we've got some singers and dancers coming up later. Oh yes, we've got some singers and dancers from 1 o'clock. We've got a world famous Matthew coming along. He's been in some award winning things at the moment, and he's going to be here. Watch out for that. Got some other great stuff coming along.
This is John Costa from Spotlight on Art, and we're here at the Sore Sound Roadshow on Jubilee Square on Sunday, and I'm here with
Josh Ramji.
Hi Josh, how are you this morning?
I am fantastic, all the better for being here.
Excellent. So tell us what you're up to today and who you're promoting.
Right, I am from Utsav Radio, that's Gujarati radio. Basically, we are based on 15 Loughborough Road and we play Gujarati music for the community. We are a community radio. And we play religious music from 7 to 9 in the morning. And the rest of the day from 9 o'clock till 10 o'clock at night, we have presenters playing lovely, lovely Gujarati geets, ghazal, and garbas, and all kinds of lovely music. And also we do interviews, community interviews. We talk about issues, and we also talk about different issues in life as well.
So can people get in touch with you by ringing in or texting or sending you an email?
Yes, we can. We have we can email on sales@radioutsav.com. Our telephone number is 0116-229-0421. The code is 0116, and WhatsApp messages, you can even phone us, is 073-888-7386. You can send us message on WhatsApp, and you can make even a request for a song. Any celebrations, birthdays, anniversaries, give us a call and we'll play a song for you.
So tell me, how long have you been involved in community radio or community media here in Leicester?
Well, I first started 1982, and this was...
No.
Yes, 1982. And Don Kotak, when we were at Grenville Road, and they were doing Leicester Sound, I think. And I got my first break there with Don Kotak. And then we moved on to another radio station. And then I was out of touch 15 years. And then I started in March again with Radio Utsav.
So how did you first get involved in radio? Was it because you were interested in finding your voice? Or was it you're interested in getting into the music radio industry business? You saw it as a way into a career. What was your first calling towards getting involved in radio?
You're not going to believe this. I used to send requests in to John Avington in them days. And every day I was sending in requests, and at about 7:15, John would say, this is Josh's spot now. Josh has got so many friends. She's saying hello to so many friends. And then obviously there was Asian radio there as well, and Don Kotak was on it. So I used to send a request there as well. And then somebody suggested, Josh, why don't you speak to Don? Spoke to Don, and Don says, come and do a voice test. So went and did a voice test, and Don says, yeah, come on in. Do you want to do diary events? So I started with diary events. And I am in the computer. I was on computers. So at that time in 1980, I wasn't interested in having a career like this. I still don't have a career in radio or media. And then I started and did various other presenting. And then we had Midland Asian Television, MATV, Vinod Popat. He started a local community channel. So I did loads of stuff on it. I had a program on television called Saheli. And I used to do cooking, I used to do interviews, interview religious leaders, even interview people, alternative therapies. And I cooked, and I did lots of crafts on television. And now I'm with Utsav Radio again. I love media.
So we're here talking about radio, yet you've been involved in radio at the beginning, requesting things. Then you got involved in doing diary tests. I did a voice test. Then you got involved in more the sort of television, cable television side. And now you're back to radio. So you're probably quite a good person to speak to about, is community radio alive and well in 2025 in Leicester?
Absolutely. Community radio keeps all the people going. The people who are probably at home, especially the elderly, the infirm, and it keeps them company, because community radio, they in their own language, they can listen to somebody in their own language, the songs, the religious songs as well that are played. So I think it's fantastic, and there's so many stations there. They have a good choice now for Asian radio.
Okay, so my final question. As a young person now who's, you know, into TikTok and is making podcasts and things like that, do you think it's easier for them to get into the kind of the media sector now, or do you think it's, you know, the way that you did it, which was, you know, being interested, being keen, you know, contacting people, you know, putting the time in on the ground floor, that actually what you'll end up doing now, you're doing much more because you're interested in it rather than you didn't see it as a career?
I think the younger generation now have a better choice, and I think sometimes they are afraid because the big stations, they will ask for this, that and the other. But if they approach the local stations, community radios, and go in and say, I'm interested in media, I would like to do a show, I'd like to do something, can you help? And they'll welcome them with open arms. So I'd say to the younger generation, go and just do that.
Lovely. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak to me.
Thank you very much.
So this is John Costa. We're still on Jubilee Square with the Source Sound Radio show. It's going really well. Lots of people about. Weather's quite nice. We try to avoid the weather whenever we have our podcast, Rob and I, but he's just taken a photograph. And we've got people here wandering around from lots of different radio shows, radio stations, community media and stuff. It's been quite good to talk to lots of different people. And obviously, Helen from the Edmonton Echo is always in attendance supporting all of these events, which is marvellous. But she's actually brought someone along with her today, and that is Maddie. Maddie, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. I'm great, thank you.
Good. So tell me a little bit about, why have you come along today?
I met Helen a couple of weeks ago at a local event, and it was so lovely to see a reporter going round and making sure we're seeing these local events talked about. So I've joined forces with her and coming round here to make sure these events are getting the support and the exposure that they really deserve.
Excellent. So why are you interested in making sure that people know what's going on? What's your interest in it?
I started off with, just graduated with a degree in creative writing, and I think what was so talked about in that was making sure that the voices are heard. There's such a lack of diversity in media at the moment, so it's really lovely to see kind of this very good groundwork being done. And I think especially young people are seeing a very much a lack of these local events and these local events getting talked about. And it's really, more than anything, just really nice to be out and about and seeing people face to face.
Now, for young people now, obviously you've got, you know, so much more social media, which we didn't have, Helen and I. Helen's sitting here with us, sort of 10, 15 years ago when I was doing Citizen's Eye, which is a local community news agency I ran for 7 years. We were pre-Instagram. Can you believe that? We've got 15,000 photos on Flickr, but we were pre-Instagram. But there's a lot of choice when it comes to finding out about events and what's going on, and people are live streaming and stuff like that. But to suddenly become involved in something which I would say is still quite old school, you know, which is the printed Edmonton Echo, for example. Why were you drawn to that specifically?
I think especially with social media and that, like, culture among my age, it's sort of become a trade-off for all this social contact online, that it's become very noticeable that especially for our generation, there's very much a lack of events going on that are free to attend and don't have alcohol present. And I think a lot of people are really feeling that loss, especially on the online presence. I think it's a lot of it seems like an attempt to reach out to other people, and without that face-to-face contact that comes as a result of that, it can end up feeling a little bit hollow. So it's really lovely to just be out, and I think it's likely that if we can get the word out, you will see a lot more people my age investing in these events and coming to them and enjoying themselves at them.
So in October, on Saturday 11th of October, I've got a Saturday Heritage Fair that I run here at the Leicester Adult Education Centre in Hansom Hall. We get about 30 stalls together, lots of different heritage projects at different levels, including my own. And we have Saw Sound come along, and Evington Echo are always invited. Maybe you can come along as well if you want. But as part of that, we've got a three-week Doc Space exhibition in the basement of mixed media. So I always invite people to, you know, film and photography, artwork, performance and stuff, fashion, to then put stuff on in the heritage event during that day, to get them to think about, you know, that our culture and people's heritage is much more interesting than community news as such. A sector, a geographic area like Evington is interested in the Echo because it's about them. But if you want lots of different communities to be interested in each other's, it's not their news, it's actually what they're interested in and what they eat and, you know, what they wear and what they listen to and some spoken word and stuff like that. Is heritage something that you are interested in? Or have you come at it from the creative writing and you like to do media now, you'd not really thought about that?
I think it's... I've been so in a certain circle for so long that it is quite a new thing to be out and about and looking specifically at that, but also it's just really refreshing to see that going on and really interesting to see what's happening. I think always with community journalism, the most interesting thing is going to be the people, and given the opportunity, people will want to share things about themselves and about their culture, and that's always so interesting and lovely to kind of immerse yourself in.
So what are you hoping to gain from these volunteering opportunities with the Evington Echo and being here today? Is it an opportunity to put maybe something that you believe and felt and have seen or see a lack of when you were doing your degree into action? So you're doing something as well that's helping your own well-being and mental health and stuff like that? Or is it something that you'd really like to move into a career doing something?
It's difficult at the moment. I've been going around and just doing a bit of everything, but I think starting off in this, I mean, we were talking earlier that this isn't something you can do as a spectator sport. This is something you have to fully immerse yourself in.
Oh, I do like that. This is something you can't do as a spectator sport. I'm expecting this as a strap line on a future Evington Echo here, Ellen. There you go. She's smiling. We might even get that off. That's fantastic. That is really interesting that you made that observation.
Yeah, I mean, I'm stealing a little bit from Robert earlier. I mean, he's been so into this sector for so long, but he's absolutely right. This is something that in many ways is completely out of my comfort zone, but doing this in this format, it actually feels really natural and really lovely. So it takes doing something like this to see where you can actually go with it, because if you're just on the sidelines, it feels so out of your hands.
Brilliant. Well, listen, thank you very much for speaking to me, and good luck today.
Thank you. You too. So Rob dubbed you the godmother of community journalism with your work for the Evington Echo.
I suppose I have been as central to getting it all set up and going after it originally started 44 years ago in 1981 with just a group of local people who just thought they could make a go of it but didn't know anything about doing it.
Oh, brilliant.
But they got it going.
Yeah.
Then. And then it's had other editors before me, but I've been going for the last 20 odd years as an editor. And I had to think, what is going to make this work?
Yeah.
And I decided, and I was instrumental in thinking, let's be a charity, and then the Echo be a project of a charity. But I think I was a bit naive in that I didn't understand all the ramifications and difficulties that that might cause. But we're sort of slowly getting there, and I can't see now that we can improve and move on unless we do affiliate with larger organisations that we can sound out and trust.
Yeah, so you're branching out at the moment.
So we're branching out to look at working with Source Sound, and who have also affiliated with some of the other radio stations that you saw there. And but being, we haven't thought about doing radio, but it could be an option if we got people interested in the Echo that might want to move on and do radio and learn other things like you, really. It gives us more of an incentive to want to work with us and report, because in the end, it is what's important is having a local voice that says this is what's happening in our area.
Yeah, everything we've looked at so far is very centred on the people and what they want to see and what they're doing together.
Yes,
is that right?
Yes, that is exactly it. And it shouldn't be centred. There's a movement that Rob's identified as well of going bigger and bigger, and like the BBC now, and having huge central offices, good communication, but cutting out the journalists that used to work for Radio Leicester that went round and picked up local things are now sort of not doing that. So it is the worry at the present time of everything getting too centralised.
Yeah, so as we're expanding, trying our best to keep the ethos of the local people and maintaining that voice.
And they have a voice as well.
Then. Yeah, definitely.
But at the minute, some of them think, oh, if I can get on the national news or something, then I've made it.
Yeah,
but then if they do that, they've only got five minutes of fame.
Yeah,
and that's not the way it should be done, really.
I mean, definitely. You've been here for a while. What's sort of been your favourite part throughout all of this?
I really like the magazine, and I think it would be a shame to lose it, because it's the coordination. It's sort of not knowing what's going to happen for the next one. And then things coming in, getting people sending stuff in, and how, in the end, you can make it all gel into a magazine.
Yeah.
And I like doing that. And I also like going out and being out in the community. So in a way, I think I prefer the job of being a reporter.
Yeah.
More really, but then it needs somebody to do the admin, and that is a little bit, has to be done well.
Yeah.
But it's a bit of the boring bit.
So perils of being so up to date and so invested in the community, I imagine it's a very last minute rush to get everything together.
Always thinking, I don't think we'll make another magazine. but then somehow it will come together.
Yeah,
and of course here we can do quite a big middle page spread or whatever about this event.
Yeah, I mean it must be massively rewarding to go out into your local community and find so much going on and so much to talk about that is just often overlooked in general.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly it. Yes, and we've becoming a charity, and then thinking, well, we will do it properly whether anybody else does or not.
Yeah.
And really working for that and believing that it will work.
Yeah. I mean, there's so much invested in this, and it's really easy to see the payoff going on and everyone joined together. It's just lovely to see.
Yeah. But I am worried about my age.
Yeah.
And how long, and whether anything can be set up that will keep it going.
I think so.
After me.
I think a lot of young people are like feeling the effects of that very decentralised general radio that's going on, and I think especially for me coming back into this sector and seeing yeah. all of the local events that's going on. It's quite reassuring to see so much actually going on yeah. in yeah. your local surroundings. So I think a lot of young people would be interested in it.
Yes, and that's what I think we have to concentrate on next, is actually being able to put on really good community training for journalists.
Yeah.
And really making that... And in the end, of course, they're going to have to be paid, aren't they? And I can't see that at the minute,
yeah.
how that will work, unless it's a huge bid that we can get. But then, I mean, Rob is doing massive works, writing to Ofcom and everything.
Yeah.
About the value of local news and not centralisation. Basically, most of what he writes is on that theme.
Yeah.
And he keeps writing it in different ways. And he's done a lot of work, really. The radio stations that there have been supported by him.
Yeah.
To get going. So. And John has done a lot of work to getting Source Sound going.
Yeah.
Because that needed to remodel itself.
Yeah. So you're all coming together to do your best to get people to invest back into this sort of area and this style of journalism.
Yes.
Brilliant.
Yes. That's exactly it.
Thank you.
My name is Sajan Odedra. And at present, I'm here with Satsang Radio, which is the new Hindu radio that's opening. We got studio ready now in the pupil center, and we're gonna start broadcasting from next week. So that's why I'm here at the Jubilee Square today.
Oh, brilliant! So you're brand new.
Brand new as in the radio is brand new, but I used to work with other radios up till now as well.
Ah, okay. Is this you sort of taking the helm of your own sort of one and putting forward yeah. your own ideas properly?
Yes, that's what we're doing. And we're at the new, better studio now, so which is very nice. Yeah.
Are you enjoying having your own place where you can direct as you like?
Yeah, because the studio is a bit big and all the equipment's new. So it's much better. And I'm a retired teacher. I used to teach with Helen, and I taught at lots of other schools as well. But I still teach Gujarati, that's my mother tongue, to other three schools, after school, like supplementary schools.
Brilliant. Is that the sort of thing you're focused on and that you're trying to broadcast now?
More or less, yeah. Because together with that, I'm a singer as well. I sing the traditional Gujarati folk songs. So this radio is about putting a music across to our community here in UK. Because we're worldwide anyway online. And we're trying to involve more and more young people so we can preserve our own language, culture, and leave it behind us. Because once we're gone, we need somebody else to carry on with it.
Yeah, so it's a really good opportunity to reach out amongst the community and give everyone a space to showcase their culture.
Yeah, excellent. This is the excellent place where we can reach so many varieties of audience. And it's not just tens, 15s, 100s, it's about thousands. He works out in thousands. So then we are able to put the ideas across to wider community, a wider range of people like young, youth, old, even people who are not able to come out of the house for the health reason and things. So we cover all that as well. Together with the our traditional music, devotional music. We talk about, I'll talk about children's stories and children's nursery rhymes and all to do with the children, me being teacher all my life. And then we talk about the health, like health is in your hand. and health is your birthright to be healthy. It's birthright to learn your own mother tongue, things like that. We try and create a varieties of shows, different presenters brings in a different things. So then we are able to cover almost all the genres, not just music. It's all about health, community, preserving our culture, preserving our food, our clothes. So it's all like one big package.
That's great. And with this platform, you seem to be expanding it out to so many people. Is your aim to have them join up and bring forward what's important to them and what they want to see preserved and discussed?
Yeah, we at Satsang Radio, we don't say, oh, only just for us, like, it's for a wider community. So it doesn't really matter which community people come to us. We provide the same sort of services to them because we respect all the other community as well. So if you respect others, they'll respect you. So that's our motto as well. Giving a love to everyone, spreading a love around, and not just keeping it to ourselves, but giving out to all the other communities as well.
You can really tell that today, even with the setup you've got at the moment, that you're sharing amongst this very lovely network of radios, but it seems so friendly and so welcoming, everything, how it's coming across.
Yeah, that's what we are. It's like we say Vasudevam Kutumbam, so that means the whole world is one big family, and that's what main our motto is, like, create a huge family and spread the love around, spread the friendship around, share the language, share the food, share the clothes. So it's like giving and taking and giving and taking.
It seems that you're still very much a teacher at heart.
Always be teacher.
Yeah. Has working in that area kind of given you both the skills to talk to people and the drive to include so many more young people in this effort?
Yeah, because once you teach, you always be teacher all your life, as Helen can tell. We don't say I, we say we. Yeah, like we as a class, we as a children, we as a school, we as a community. So it's like bringing everyone together, not just saying I'm doing, I do. So I is not in my dictionary, it's always a we. We as a community, we as a family, we as the teachers and students. So, yeah, it's bringing everything together.
Brilliant. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much, and thank you for having me today as well.
Thank you.
Okay, so can you tell us your name and what it is that you do on the radio?
Right. My name is Jaydeep Joshi. Profession-wise, I'm an Ayurvedic consultant, so here we call it herbalist. And I'm working with Radio Utsav because it's a Gujarati, and Gujarati is my mother tongue, and I love my Gujarati language. I'm running one Gujarati school and Sanskrit school as well here. I'm holding presidency of this Gujarati school running since last 50, 60 years in this Leicester. So I love it. That's why I'm involved in this Radio Utsav, promoting our Gujarati culture. And I love it because I used to do Gujarati theater, Gujarati soaps in India and here as well. So I'm interested in this Radio Utsav. Oh, they are promoting my language and my mother tongue. So let me join with them. It's all voluntary, but I'm enjoying.
So is it an opportunity for you to share your ideas and your thoughts about things as well? You know, talk to friends, you know, make reconnect with people that you haven't spoke to for a while? Because ultimately, as a presenter, you've got quite a bit of responsibility and you're able to bring people together.
Yes, absolutely. You're right. Because we are discussing different topics, like intellectual topics, like some Gujarati folks, Gujarati dance, Gujarati drama. We are taking interviews with some people as well. And different way we are promoting our Gujarati culture. And you are right, we are on radio. So it's live and it's a digital dab. So people can listen to us from all over the world. And it's a 9B is our frequency, but they can listen to us because Gujarati people are everywhere in the world. So that's why they are very interesting now. Okay, oh, you are doing this Gujarati language, an exclusive Gujarati language. Okay, we are using some other languages, ifs and buts, but ideally and 90% we are using our Gujarati culture. So So, so many vast culture. Every culture has a different things. Like some culture has a theater, some culture has a song, some culture has a discussion, some culture has their own literature. So we are discussing all these things on our Gujarati Utsav Radio.
Okay, who are you?
Okay, I'm Rob Watson, and I always describe what I do is things around community media. So we're here today in Jubilee Square, and we've got the Saw Sound radio station. We're doing a kind of family picnic day, so bring a picnic with you and listen to some music. But we've also got some friends from the community media groups in Leicester. So we've got Evington Echo. We've got Satsang Community Radio, which is a new station, and Utsav Community Radio. And we've got help with John Costa from Doc Media Centre. And there's some stuff I've brought about, my stuff to do with Decentred Media and Radio Lear.
Brilliant. So there's a real eclectic mix of you here at the moment.
It's great. And the you know, the fantastic thing about the other radio stations is how many women are involved and run them, because often it can be a bit blokey when you're setting up radio stations and things. But actually, it's always nice to see that the people in the Gujarati and the Punjabi speaking communities, actually the women are a lot more active in community radio, and that kind of is reflected in Indian community radio as well. Women really are in the, you know, provide, do most of the work as ever.
Yeah, I mean, there's a real, you can tell when you come in, there's a real central idea of empowering the people to speak and making sure the local community has a voice. So it's really lovely to see all the diversity just in an event even like this, especially at the setting up stage already. There were so many different people in here. It's lovely to see.
Yeah, and it's a social thing, isn't it? You know, it's not, it doesn't have to be trying to do anything more than just bring people together. You know, when you talk about its purpose, it doesn't have to have a big outcome. So we're set up just outside BBC Radio Leicester, which we, you know, and there's the signs with the history of BBC Radio Leicester and the Asian network, and they tend to, you know, the BBC tends to need a big goal, if you like, whereas we don't. We're just a group of people who, you know, the starting point for community media is the people who are involved themselves. Does it feel good to us as volunteers and as contributors? And then we can think about our audience and our listeners and the community of people that we serve. So it's a combination. You know, if you work in a professional media environment, you're pretty much not really, it's not about what you and the people who work in there want. It's really about how it can make money or how it can achieve some of the ends. Whereas part of what we do is very much about, can we bring people together who get on and can share and can help each other? And hopefully that's a step forward to having a kind of community media network in Leicester that we can use to support people more and make more media for themselves.
Definitely. Do you find when you start to build up so much of a rapport with these local people that the stories essentially just write themselves at this point?
No. And the experience with the Evington Echo is a really good example of that. You really have to work with people. One is to build their confidence as what is a viable story, what is of interest to the readers of the Echo or the listeners of Saw Sound. And two is letting go and relearning what we mean by media is that it does. So I use a phrase which is that most of our media kind of tells us what we should care about, but we're media which is what people need, what, you know, that helps people to care for something. So if you think about the environment, for example, you say to somebody, I care. Do you care about the environment? And everyone says, oh, yes, of course I do. So how do you care about the environment? Well, I like watching David Attenborough programmes and the pictures of penguins. I say, okay, well, how do you care for the environment? And somebody says, well, I've got a pot and I grow some plants. I say, okay, that's the starting point for a conversation. And with the Echo, and it's really about finding those things that people, you know, like their gardens, their neighbourhood, the upkeep of the area, the groups, the civic society ethos. It's all about building that up practically rather than just caring. I care about the idea of having a strong community. And it's like, well, how do you bring that about? How do you make that work? And our media is part of that. It's part of sharing stories and building a sense of belonging and a sense of identity.
Yeah, I suppose so many people think of media as this distant thing, and they're so used to it being outside of their hands and beyond their perspective. I suppose it is about building up that confidence to talk about what's going on and to allow proper reportage to happen in the local area. Have you recently had an influx of people from the looks of it as you try to set this up?
Yeah, I mean, there's a strong interest, and in some way there's two types of community that you can look at. There's community of identity, and that builds on, if you like, people's need to belong with people like themselves. But then you also have to have a community of place where those people interact with other people from different communities. And a lot of the focus tends to be, to begin with, on building a stronger identity of people who speak a particular language, have a particular faith, come from a particular ethnic identity. But then you've got to say, well, like in Leicester, you know, how do we bridge across those things? So people can bond really strongly, but then you say, well, okay, well, that's if you just, you, the danger is you create small echo chambers and silos, and then you've got to ask the question, well, how do we bridge across all of that so that we encompass the particular place? So it's not just about the small individual groups, it's also about how we interact with each other as well, because that's how we get a cohesive, strong society and a sense of community overall. Is that, and Leicester's so, you know, changed so much in even a short period of time. You know, we've got a huge number of new people in the city who live here now, and you know, it's different than it was 5 years ago. So we have to keep up with this all the time. It can't stand still.
Yeah. Have you found, especially recently, especially post-COVID, that a lot of the local events that would take place in this area and would invite all these sorts of people together, have you found that those are particularly lacking at the moment, or not as good as they had been?
Well, I kind of worry it's not looking forward enough. So we have a tendency to kind of go, okay, well, we've got Diwali, we've got Caribbean Carnival, we've got, you know, you can tick the boxes. And then you look at young people and, you know, kind of you say, you know, how is that, what's the culture and the sense of community that people are going to have in 5-10 years time? What are young people who are, you know, kind of, what are their kids going to grow up in? And it's like, we've got to have our eye on the future rather than just always holding on to what we've had in the past. It's important to remember the past and you know, examine the past in terms of its both its good elements and its bad elements. But at the same time, we've really got to be saying, well, what's next? How do we do something which we can be proud of, that people looking back in 20, 30 years' time might be able to say, you know, this was worthwhile.
Yeah. So you're being really thoughtful in what you invest in at the moment and trying to build on what is already here.
Yeah. And that's the first thing. Look around, see who's got the skills and expertise within the community already, and you'll be surprised that there's lots of people who are doing lots of things.
All right. So, Rob, we've got a very eclectic group of photos with us that we were displaying at this event. Did you want to walk us through what the thinking was behind a lot of these?
Well, a couple of years ago, John Costa organised a photo exhibition, he calls it Doc 8 Photo, at the Adult Education Centre, and he asked me if I'd, knowing that I'd take a lot of photos, would I do some? And I thought, I didn't really want to kind of hang them on the wall, so I thought, came up with the idea of putting them on a vinyl banner, pull-up banner, so I've got two pull-up banners. And really, it's a collection of photos that I've taken over that particular period of time, say two or three years beforehand, which give a kind of they're kind of snapshots, but they're a kind of view on life in the UK, I suppose, of you know, and it's a bit, as you say, it's eclectic. It's they're not really taken stylistically. They're more kind of captured as you go along. So most of them are taken on my smartphone, and it's kind of what you can see as you're wandering about and doing things. I thought the idea of putting them all onto a sheet. There's two banners. One is the portrait mode, and one is the landscape mode pictures, because it was just easier to get them onto the onto the banner. So it was really that. It's the idea as well that, you know, photography is a big important part of community media, and putting them up today was because I kind of had them and I thought it'd be nice to have them seen again. But also, you know, you don't just have to be, when you contribute to something like the Edmonton Echo, photographs are incredibly important. But you don't necessarily need to be a professional photographer. They don't need to be heavily stylized. They can be snapshots that you might share otherwise between your family and friends on your WhatsApp groups. They capture a moment in time in different places.
Absolutely. The time frame was actually genuinely surprising because every single one of these looked like you could go out and take these photos today. They look like you can find them right here.
Yeah, and I suppose, you know, you might have to wait, you know, if you come back in 30 years' time and look at them, then you'll really be able to see the difference. And things like cars are always the, the indicator. Maybe, you know, the climate. I mean, one of the challenges was living in the West End of Leicester. I don't know if you've ever heard of, there was at one point a kind of hashtag for Narb Life, kind of Narborough Road, and things that people would take photographs. And I had a friend who also did mattresses of the West End, because in the West End of Leicester, the Narborough Road area, there's a lot of people stay on a short term, and then the things that they've got in the house get dumped on the street, and mattresses were one of them. And it was like it was like a plague of mattresses. But I didn't want to concentrate on these images. I didn't want to over concentrate on the kind of the doom and the gloom side of it, because you know to some extent as well, I've stopped taking photographs around Leicester because the things that you often see are fairly dilapidated, and things are, you know, the sense that things have fallen apart, and it's like it's not really that good for me and my, if you like, mental health to only ever see the negative side of it. But it's overwhelmingly negative, because that's the environment that you're in, and it's like you can't do anything other than capture that with a kind of certain amount of, if you try and edit it too much, and if you try and present it and curate it in a way where there's a false narrative, so you can get you that's marketing. That's you boost the idea. Oh, it's lovely in Leicester. It's lovely in the West End. It's like, well, it isn't. There's always another side to it. And you know, I tend to find that it's things that frustrate me, or things that, you know, kind of, I don't like using the word, but kind of are quirky or a little bit, you know, it's like that stand out. So they're not straightforward. You know, a lot of people wouldn't take a photograph of them. But you know, and things like taking photos of your food, you know, it's like, well, you look back on it and you go, well, actually, it reminds you of something, which was of that particular moment, and you kind of have to think back and think, well, where was I doing at that time, what was going on, and I hope with the people who see them that they can think the same, you know, they're asking the same kind of questions.
Yeah, some of the more standout photos seem to be the ones which would be taken for granted as everyday life, but there's some really gorgeous ones where you can see wildlife existing like among the cityscape and the brush next to the graffiti, and those are some really gorgeous shots.
Yeah, and the trick is to take lots and lots of photographs, and then you can pick out the ones that really stand out like that. If you try and be too perfectionist about an individual photo, you lose. I'm quite intuitive with the way I take photographs. I don't spend a long time framing them. You kind of capturing things as you're going through. There's a moment you look out the window on a train, and you see the landscape or the cityscape, and you capture that. And it's like it's fleeting, it's gone. You know, you've got a few seconds to capture it, and doing it with people doing this with their phones. It's much more accessible to do that now, rather than always carrying a camera with you, which is what you used to have to do. So it's more difficult to, it's about those perspectives and those, you know, those people that you're with. I don't tend to photograph people anymore, because I usually find that people are reluctant to be photographed. So you kind of have to do that kind of, you know, engaging with people. So if you're capturing something in the background, it kind of, you get a bit more of a fluid sense that they're just doing something unselfconsciously. So you kind of have to blend in a bit.
Yeah. So you're following a lot of different people, and I imagine a lot of different routes over the period of time. When you went back to edit and select, could you find yourself going through the same journey you went through when you were going to take them?
To be honest with you, I don't tend to look back in that way. It's like I'm quite future-oriented. It's like, what's the next thing I'm going to do? And then you're surprised when you bring them out and you go, well, you know, I really can't tell you that I didn't put much thought into it. And it's like, sometimes I think you've got to let go of the thoughtfulness of it. You can overthink them and go with your intuition, go with the feelings that, you know, you encounter. And you're asking the question, well, why is this like this? And it's just something that captures about the scene, which if you try and think it through too much, it probably won't look any good.
Yeah, I think you can really tell when you look at them that these are things that, despite them being about just an everyday, there are things there that have caught someone's eye, and they keep that eye-catching look about them, even if they seem everyday. Once you get in and you focus in on them, there is some really interesting stuff happens that speaks to a lot of wider stuff going on. And I think that intuitive part of it is really important for that.
Well, you know, the phrase, the gold is found in the dirt, you know, and it's like, so we often think that we had to look up the peaks of the mountains and the sunset, and actually what's under our feet often is as important. And it's just, it really is a kind of a... just a series of a care, and I suppose the main thing is that anybody can do this. There is nothing special about this. It's just most people have got these collections on their phones. The next step is to put it into the public by, you know, mounting it on a wall, taking part in an exhibition, or, you know, publishing it as a book, or putting it on a roll-up banner or something. So there's nothing, there really isn't any kind of special magic ingredient to this. It's just get them together and put them in some format that you can share with other people.
If you were to ask people to go out and take these photos, these style of things, of their surroundings, what sort of hashtag would you love to see online for people to put these under?
The social media things don't use hashtags much anymore now, do they? We used to, hashtags are gone. I mean, that's the interesting thing about this, you know, the kind of way we find things now, because the search, you know, Elon Musk says on X, you don't need to use hashtags anymore. It'll find things for you on the keyword searches. Right, you don't need to put a hashtag on it. It was useful at a time. But I think, you know, for me, it's just kind of Leicester or just out and about. You know, you could get philosophical about it, but it's, I don't think maybe you should enjoy images on that basis. It's just, you know, it's, if you walk past it and something catches your eye, well, why does it catch your eye? You know, that's down to the individual. So it's, you know, I you take it or leave it.
Brilliant. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Hi, my name's John Costa. Nice to meet you.
Lovely to meet you. What are you doing here today?
So I'm here supporting Source Sound, doing their roadshow today. When they set up about a year ago, I was became the chair for the first year. To help get things going, and also my colleague Rob Watson, who I record two weekly podcasts with, Spotlight on Art and Spotlight on Heritage. Normally we record those on a Wednesday at the LCB Depot. Rob said about coming down today and capturing some content, so you're interviewing me because I interviewed you.
Lovely trade-off here going on. So how long have you been with Soul Radio, and what got you into it?
Well, I ran an organisation in Leicester from 2008 to 2014 called Citizen's Eye, which was the first beacon hub of citizen journalism in the UK, according to the Media Trust. We used to do regular cafes, and I used to run the training at the College of Journalism here at the BBC Radio Leicester building, just down from where we're sitting now. And we had a page a week for Citizen's Eye in the Leicester Mercury, and I think we had six desks outside the editor's office there, and we used to do a young person's newspaper, had about 20 different news agencies covering different, you know, before Eco became a thing, we had Eco Eye, and we had an old person's one called Senior Eye. And it was really interesting because it was always about volunteers and being able to find their voice you know, particularly those that were new communities, new arrivals. We had one for ex-offenders. I'd not long come out of prison. And we had things like homelessness. And it's fascinating to look back now, 11 years since Citizen's Eye closed, that some of the same issues, when I look back through the archive, the whole archive, I think we've got 15,000 photos on Flickr and 1,200 films on YouTube and lots of printed materials and ephemera, that when I go back through all of that, we were still talking about exactly the same things then, about, you know, homelessness, worried about the planet, you know, community safety, as people do now. So what you find is that by reviewing, when having it all archived in the museum of community media, it gives you an opportunity to look back on some of the content that, you know, we were doing 14 years ago, and realizing that no one's really grasped that nettle and dealt with some of these issues. We're talking about exactly the same thing. I'll give you an example. I was sitting in a coffee shop the other day on Loseby Lane, and there was a person rough sleeping in a cardboard box in a doorway opposite. And I remember being involved in reporting on an organisation setting up here called No Second Night Out. I think it was about 2011, 2012 maybe. And that was that no one needed to spend a second night out on the street, rough sleeping. And we got to the point where it was working. There was no one was, you know, if you wanted help, there was somewhere for you to go, there was help for you. And I remember the new chair, Reverend Tim Blewett of Action Homeless. We had a homelessness news agency as well that we got some lottery funding for. He spent, as part of his embedding himself as the chair, would spend, he set out to spend as many nights as he could in Leicester, rough sleeping, until someone offered him a bed. And then he would confess who he was, that he was the chair and stuff like that. And he got to about five nights. I think I recorded him and interviewed him. They're all on YouTube for people to watch. Me interviewing him midnight, for four nights in a row outside Leicester train station. And they set up No Second Night Out because of that, you know. And so, you know, these things can be solved. It just takes a lot of willingness for people to do it, and of course it relies a lot on the voluntary sector to do it. And then, you know, the city council, you know, they don't necessarily solve some of these issues. And because we've had such a change in things like BBC Radio Leicester now broadcasts much more to the East Midlands, the Leicester Mercury no longer has a newsroom here in Leicester, that it falls, you know, squarely on the shoulders of keen, enthusiastic young people using social media and in a community media way, like you're doing exactly at this moment, but also organisations like the Everton Echo that has been successfully running for so many years, of which actually their first 300 issues are, I do actually own in the, I actually have in the archive of the Museum of Community Media, over 40 years. They're 300 issues over 40 years, and I think, you know, Saw Sound is exactly the same. You know, it's servicing the English speaking community. There's lots of other community radio stations here today that are represented, that, you know, present different communities, different faiths, you know, people from different parts of the world. But it's this collective. Where's this collective coming together with this news when the mainstream media quite clearly is not interested in raising these issues? So a very long answer to your question about, you know, being involved in community media and Saw Sound is, Saw Sound for me and being the chair to help that get off the ground was just a way of being able to give something back, because for a long time I'd seen how much the sector, you know, has needed a service like that, to give it some balance, you know, just because the Irish community has been in Leicester for 60, 70 years, it doesn't mean that the Irish community, you know, doesn't need help or doesn't need a voice or wants to tell people something. So we can focus on new arrivals and people from different places, but we also need to make sure that everybody's got the ability to have some equity at the table to be able to tell their story.
Definitely. I mean, you've talked about this kind of concerning overlap between a lot of old news and today's news. Do you find that with these sorts of events, when you're reporting about this and what the community can do, do you think that there'll be more activity to resolve these things once people know that it's within their hands and within the hands of volunteers, and that they can do something?
That's a good question, because the answer should be yes, more people. But I think also, I'll give you an example. So my banner down there, my Citizen's Eye banner there, you know, strapped to that gazebo just outside BBC Radio Leicester, I took a photo earlier, because it's quite funny, because when you set up, those mainstream people look at you as, oh, you're citizens reporters or you're community reporters and stuff, you know, you're not really serious, you're not proper journalists, and like, which we never claimed to be. We were community reporters, you know, you don't need to be a journalist to do that. And now, 14 years later, I can put my banner up with the Museum of Community Media logo on it outside there, but they don't, they're not interested in Leicester. It says BBC Radio Leicester, but it's BBC East Midlands. They broadcast across the East Midlands. So, you know, who sold out? You know, who gave up capturing local content? So you could turn around and say, well, okay, you know, maybe some of these radio stations mean people don't listen to BBC Radio Leicester, but it's not necessarily the staff that's in there. It's the BBC itself that's devalued the impact of local engagement and talking to people and stuff. And so if people don't do it for themselves, which is running your own podcast, running your own social media channels, Instagram, running your own YouTube playlist, or being involved in some of these organisations, then there is no way for people to be able to find their voice.
Yeah, do you find that a lot of people have this idea of media as this huge faceless entity that is sort of untouchable, and are you trying to change that perspective?
Yes, because ultimately, you know, our approach with the volunteers that we had when we did Citizen's Eye for 7 years, I when they made me the beacon hub of citizens of community journalism, the Media Trust, I was like, well, actually, I don't really want that because, you know, I we've got a good blog, but we think the Manchester Mule's much better. And we've got a good YouTube channel, but, you know, someone else is much better. And, you know, we've got this, but this we think someone else is much better. And the guy said, no. He said, you don't understand, John. He said, I've spoken to all of those people and they all like the fact that every Tuesday morning for an hour, well, for 7 years we did it, we burnt out 3 coffee shops. We would run a community newsroom in a coffee shop. You know, we'd put a banner up for an hour and we'd do that. And I think what you find is then it's about people finding their voice and giving people permission to have that voice and that they share it. Because what you realise with the mainstream media, even today, yeah, is if you don't put your own view across or represent who you are in an authentic way, someone will write about you. Someone will tell other people about you and what you're like. So for me, that is the common ground. That's the lowest common denominator. Is if you want someone to know about your gender, your issue, your particular, you know, interest area, your where you're from, your ethnicity, you know, that you're a new arrival. If you don't tell people, then someone else very rarely is going to be empathetic enough to tell that story. We you know, people were lucky when we had Citizen's Eye because that was where I'd come from the East End of London. I wanted to tell those kind of genuine stories. There are still organisations that are doing that, you know, or empathetic. But, you know, ultimately, you can't expect somewhere like the Evington Echo to do that for Leicester when it's the Evington Echo. And so, you know, Helen and I have spoke many times, and we even mentioned it this morning about, you know, well, where's these magazines, where's the person driving forward this kind of local community media content for all these other areas of Leicester? You know, when you know, the Evington Echo, I think, is a beacon example itself of being able to report on a particular area in a consistent way. And again, it's not without its challenges, you know, because there's always someone that's willing to disagree with you. But I think when people disagree with you, it's normally because you're doing something right.
Yeah, it's really interesting to hear you say that people's wariness around media can be resolved by sort of investing in it more and getting more involved with it, and that sounds like quite a hard barrier to break through for most people, so that you get to the proper ideas and you get to the heart of the community that is so much part of your ethos.
Well, it's storytelling, isn't it? At the end of the day, it's very, very simple. My partner, Tina, she said to me, you know, the reason I like organising my heritage fairs, she said, is because it's just like Citizen's Eye. So I said, well, what do you mean? She said, well, with Citizen's Eye, you had all these news agencies and your weekly, you know, cafe, and you'd do community news and you'd get all these people together and all that sort of stuff. She said, and then you suddenly realised that people weren't interested in, you know, their news anymore. She said, so you realise that you still like talking to these people, but you talk about their heritage. So you get them all together in a room where all these different groups who wouldn't normally meet now have a table next to each other with their, like, you know, talking about their food, their music, their fashion, literature, spoken word, you know, the geography and all the history and all this sort of stuff. And of course you're interested because you're like, oh God, I didn't realise that you had one of them. We've got one of them. I didn't realise you did this kind of type of fashion. We've got this type of fashion. And she said, John, you're just doing Citizen's Eye all over again.
Brilliant. Is it a lot of it? Do you find it the most rewarding, these interactions with people that come of sort of beyond the reportage element? Do you find that that's the most enjoyable part of this experience.
Yeah, without a doubt, because I think what tends to happen is people can tell you what happened, they can tell you who was involved, probably who started it and who ended it, they'll tell you what the consequences were, and they'll be able to tell you a little bit about the impact of you know, that particular incident or this people doing this or something, but they can't tell you why. They just can't tell you why any of that stuff happened. So for me, it's about when you speak to someone that is from that community or has some interest in that, and they tell you a story, then actually it becomes, with all stories, they become relatable to you. And when they're relatable to you, it means that you're more likely to be interested, empathetic, not even sympathetic, just be empathetic, you know, in that particular situation. Be interested, but then also think to yourself, well, actually, I've got a story like that. Why can't I tell my story? Why can't I go into a museum and find my story, my community's story, in that timeline of Leicester? It's because no one's interested.
Yeah. You know what I mean? So you find that a lot of your work is building people up to express themselves more and giving them the platform to do it.
That's all my work.
Brilliant.